Welcome to the Triumphal Feast Podcast, a ministry of Elder Bryce Lowrance, speaking to you from Brentwood Hills Primitive Baptist Church in Fort Worth, Texas. This edition of Triumphal Feast concludes the message, The Flight and Egypt. Today, we continue with the horrendous event of Herod's slaughter of all the children under 2 years old. We will also see that the current epidemic of abortion here in America is just as horrible as the murderous acts of Herod. The message concludes with Joseph bringing Mary and Jesus back through Israel into Nazareth of Galilee. When we think of this scene, we don't want to think of it, do we? We don't want to. Honestly, when I was working on my blogs, you know, I always include a picture in there. I didn't want to find a picture of this. And so I found the most nondescript one I could. You'll see it. But brethren, we need to picture it. We need to understand that this was a horrible event. And be disgusted by it. Because the United States of America today is no different than Herod of old. Call it choice, call it abortion. Brethren, it is the murder of children. And it's not in the thousands anymore, it's in the millions. And it is done for the same selfish reasons that Herod did. Getting in the way of my personal upward mobility. It's an inconvenience to my plans. That child may take something away from me. The problem with America today is it's not just one Herod. It's thousands thinking that their life is more important than the life of the child. And I include the father in that. And there are doctors standing and waiting with knife in hand to do the bidding of the Herods. As upset as we are about this, we need to be upset about that as well. And don't be afraid to speak it. You're going to be mocked. You know, we realize that. We realize that if we stand on principle, that people are going to mock us. What we need to look at, though, is the wise men stood on principle, and Herod thought he was being mocked by them. They're going to get angry with you because they're going to think you're doing something against them. That's fine. There is absolutely nothing wrong for speaking up for those that cannot speak for themselves. And if we are mocked, but lives are saved, let me be mocked. If you know a young woman that is with child, encourage one of the most glorious things that there is. And it is the heart of the gospel message, adoption. There are thousands of families that would love that child. Let me rephrase that, because I know a couple that said this, that before they even had the child, loved the child, prepared their home for him. Just like this is a horrible scene. Verse 19, back in Matthew 2. But when Herod was dead, you know, Matthew through this area is writing sequentially. Within the year, this happened about 4 BC. Within the year of Herod ordering the slaughter of these children, Herod was dead. God did not permit his sin. God did not promote his sin. God did not use his sin for good. These things, as it is written in the Old Testament, these sins never came into the mind of God. Herod the Great, to the best that we can record, died of an illness that began with a chronic kidney disease. And he got gangrene of the kidneys. And then it spread. Herod died from the inside out. God was not. God is not going to be mocked to those that stand by or that actively participate in the killing of life. The sanctity of life, brethren, precedes Old Testament law. Cain kills Abel. God brings him into judgment immediately. Noah gets off the ark. God says that if a man harm another man to the point he takes his life will I require. God required the life of Herod, and Herod's gone. But when Herod was dead, behold, an angel of the Lord appeareth in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, arise and take the young child and his mother and go into the land of Israel, for they are dead which sought the young child's life. That's some good news. And notice also, I didn't notice this until just this morning, or just now. It says, for they are dead. Not he is dead. I think every person that was involved in the planning and the carrying out of that, they're all dead. I don't rejoice in the death of anyone. But that ought to give us pause. That if in just a matter of a few months, the Lord does this sort of thing, don't worry about those that persecute you, folks. Pray for them and move on. Don't seek retribution, because the Lord says, vengeance is mine, I will repay it. Let the Lord take care of it. And Joseph arose. He arose and took the young child and his mother and came into the land of Israel. That had to be a joyful time for them. We're getting to go back home, back to the place that we're familiar with. You know, we like to go on vacation sometimes, but don't you just sometimes want to get back home to your own bed, to places that you're familiar with? I don't know how long they were down there, but honestly, being a nomad, being a person that's wandering and sojourning, that's not a pleasant thing most of the time. It's nice to have a place you can call home and be there. But the troubles weren't over. But when they heard that Archelaus, did reign in Judea in the room of his father Herod, he was afraid to go thither, notwithstanding being warned of God in a dream. He turned aside into the parts of Galilee, and he came and dwelt in a city called Nazareth, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophets, he shall be called a Nazarene. After Herod realized he was going to die soon. And so he appointed Archelaus as his successor. Rome didn't like the pattern that was going on. So they actually, I don't know how he missed these three sons, but these three sons survived his rage from earlier. And the Roman Senate and the emperor divided what was his kingdom, the provinces that he ruled, among three of his sons. Archelaus got Judea. A man named Herod Antipas, who we're going to run across later, got the area of Galilee. And then his son Philip got the lands east of Jordan. Archelaus is spoken of here. And it says that Joseph is concerned about this guy. Some people say, well, that's a lack of faith on Joseph's part. No, God gives you faith, but he also gives you a brain. And I don't know if it occurred before Joseph took Mary and Jesus back into Israel or while they were living there. But on the Feast of the Passover, when there's lots of Jews in the street and there's lots of things going on, this Archelaus doesn't like what he is seeing. One Roman report was, actually we'll start with Josephus' report, a Jew that was there around the times, says 3,000 were killed in the streets outside the temple. Rome records it as 9,000 in a day. This guy is not any better than his father. Joseph rightly understands this is a dangerous place to be. There's a little lesson for us there. There's faith, and then there's stupidity. God gave you faith that if there is an imminent danger upon you, that you can stand. But if it's not an imminent danger, but your family is living in a place that's dangerous, he's given you a brain. You don't have to stay there. And God honors Joseph. I think his act of fear is actually some faith, because he's trusting in the Lord, and God speaks to him and says, okay, let's move. And he takes him up into Galilee. To what town? This is the marvelous grace of God here. Where did he send him? Back home to Nazareth. Now Herod Antipas, he's also a son of Herod, but he's not nearly the tyrant that these other two men were. So it was a safer place for them to be, for them to go and to live. And Luke mentions once again, now you remember Luke's audience is Jews. And so he's going to be the one that mentions a lot of scriptures about the Messiah being fulfilled. And look at it from the Jews' perspective, not having any of these prophecies fulfilled. One of them says he's going to come out of Egypt. Another one says he's going to come out of Bethlehem. Another one says he's going to come out of Nazareth. These are three different places. And they're thinking, how are we going to know really who it is? Well, Jesus was born in Bethlehem. Jesus went into Egypt and was called back out of Egypt. And he was raised in Nazareth. So he's called a Nazarene. Incidentally, there's some confusion in the world today. And I blame painters, and not guys that paint your house. I blame artists. And I blame the preachers that taught the artists this. There's a difference between a Nazarene and a Nazarite. A Nazarite was typically an adult who took a vow before the Lord for something. It could be for various reasons. And during that time that they took the vow, they did not cut their hair and they did not drink alcohol.
Okay? Typically, these were temporary. We have two examples in the Bible where they were not temporary vows, Samson and John the Baptist. Okay? They took the vow of the Nazarite for their whole life. But that was what any Jew could do that wanted to take this vow. And when the vow was fulfilled, they cut their hair and they went back to normal. Jesus was not a Nazarite. Jesus did not have long hair. The Jews' hair was longer than mine, but typically their hair would reach a little bit further down than where my collar is. Okay, and their beards would reach about the same length. My point is, Jesus was not a hippie. Okay? He followed the traditions of the Jews, which were based on some logic and some hygiene and things like that. He was not a Nazarite, but he was a Nazarene. Just like I'm a Texan, because I'm from Texas. He is a Nazarene because he is from Nazareth. That's where he was raised. We have here before us this morning some harrowing events. Imminent danger coming upon the child Jesus. God speaking to Joseph in the middle of the night through an angel. And they leave and they flee to Egypt. Herod slaughters all of the children in Judea. Herod dies and all those that were conspiring with him. God calls them back out of Egypt. There's another king that's causing some problems and killing believers. God says, here, go out into this little village. Go back to where it's safe. And then Luke records this. In Luke 1:80. No, that's John the Baptist, not Jesus, sorry. That's not the one I'm looking for. I'm looking in Luke 2:40. And the child grew and waxed strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. In the next verse, we're going to find Jesus is already 12 years old. And then the next time we find Jesus, he's 30 years old, and John sees him when he's baptizing in the River Jordan. We don't know very much at all of what happened in the day-to-day life of Jesus as a child, as a teenager, as a young adult. Anything that we would say is speculation. And there's not a single writing out there that is the inspired word of God that tells us what went on in Jesus' childhood. There's lots of writings out there that claim to know. Don't waste your time. Because you know what? We have everything that we need to know. The grace of God was upon him. We don't need to know what it was like for the King of Glory to learn how to read and write. Because you know what? I don't think we could understand it, how the person or the God that created language would humble himself to learn language. We don't know how Jesus interacted with fellow children in his neighborhood, or on the farm, or wherever it was they happened to live there in Nazareth. We do know that the Jews say, isn't this Joseph the carpenter's son? Which tells us, most likely, Jesus, until he began his public ministry, worked with his dad, his stepfather. He did some work in carpentry. That tells me something else. He was not a skinny-looking weak fella. Okay? I don't know many carpenters that aren't pretty muscular. My point is this, we don't need to know. Because the important things of Jesus' life we have recorded for us. We have fulfillment of the prophecies of where he would be from and what would happen to him as a young child. And we have the record of his public ministry. And most importantly, we have the record of his trial and death, his burial, his resurrection, his ascension. If you want to know more about Jesus, don't worry about what the Bible doesn't say. Get more familiar with what the Bible does say. Because, brethren, the grace of God was upon him. May the Lord bless you all, is my prayer. Victorious
God, what can we... Lord willing, this weekend I plan to be at Harmony Primitive Baptist Church in Donelson, Arkansas, for their annual meeting. Their pastor is Elder Neil Phelan, Jr. Since I will be out of town on Sunday, next week's edition of Triumphal Feast will not include a message from our current series. I hope to be back with you again the following week. Until then, may the Lord bless you all, is my prayer.